Madam Speaker, it is hardly necessary for me to say that it is a unique honor to be clothed with the important trust of representing the people of Labrie in this Honorable House. Madam Speaker, immediately after the general elections of 2006, I promised my constituents that at all times in this Honorable House, I will, on their behalf, subject government policy, proposals, plans, and expenditures to systematic scrutiny. And Madam Speaker, this being the last budget prior to the general elections, I believe it is incumbent upon me to subject this budget to new levels of examination. Madam Speaker, on this occasion, I shall speak forth my sentiments freely and without reserve. This is not a time for ceremony. And should I remain quiet at this time for fear of giving offense, I should consider myself guilty of treason towards my country and an act of disloyalty towards the majesty of heaven. Madam Speaker, Madam Speaker, the question is, today is the government's final attempt to convince the people of this country that they are worthy of re-election. Madam Speaker, have the government delivered on the fundamental promises made to the electorate? And Madam Speaker, the manifesto is a written announcement of its policies and intentions if they emerge victorious in government. It sets out both the strategic directions and outlines the prospective legislation should it win sufficient support in an election to serve in government. Madam Speaker, in the 2006 manifesto, they made the following promises to the people of St. Lucia. And I would like to quote the proposed development agenda for St. Lucia, Madam Speaker, and I shall make it a document of the House. A UWP administration will achieve high rates of economic growth, create 7,000 new jobs, particularly in the information technology sector, and reduce the rate of unemployment below 10% within 5 years. Introduce strong measures to combat crime and improve safety and security. Eliminate financial mismanagement and waste of public funds, thereby reducing government's annual recurrent expenditure by $300 million. Re-establish a national development bank and create a unit trust company to encourage investment by St. Lucians. Put economic power in the hands of St. Lucians. Revitalize agriculture with special emphasis on linkages to tourism. Consolidate the various banana companies into one strong entity. Keep Wasco in the hands of St. Lucians. Promote home ownership, especially for young persons. Introduce a system of universal secondary education which caters for the talent of every child according to his or her ability, and reintroduce the transport subsidies and school feeding program. Upgrade Sir Luis Community College into a full-fledged university. Introduce National Health Service, which is comprehensive in scope, and train nurses and other personnel to support the health service. Provide study leave with pay for public servants and pay salaries to teachers and nurses during the training. Pay gratuity to civil servants prior to retirement upon giving maximum qualifying service. Reduce consumption tax on basic food items and commodities. undertake a complete review of duties and consumption taxes with a view to reducing them within 1 year. Give allowances to parents of challenged children and provide social security coverage for all challenged persons. Make Castries, Beaufort, and Supre duty-free shopping destinations. And divert all commercial traffic to a new commercial port to be built at Cul-de-Sac. Establish new yachting marinas in Beaufort and Supre and build new tourist berths in Castries, Beaufort, and Supre. Build a new terminal building at Vigi. Upgrade Supre, Denry, and St. Jude's hospitals. Provide social security coverage for farmers and fishermen. Introduce a single mother's employment program. Provide internet access to all communities and computer training in all schools within 5 years. Review the working conditions of households, domestic and part-time workers, and the working environment of shops, stores, and persons in the hotel industry. Unquote. Madam Speaker, as I went through the promises of this government, I heard the Prime Minister only once said we did that. Out of so many promises, Madam Speaker, members opposite could only respond under their breath, a maximum probably 3 times. Madam Speaker, today is a counting time. And of course, to answer the question which stares us in the face and for which this government must answer and account is that whether they have delivered on the promises made to the people of this country. And I will allow the various budgets to date to assist me in answering this question. Madam Speaker, in its first budget to the nation in April 2007, among the promises made were tunnels all over the place and some big projects. It just fell short of saying that they are going to have a nuclear plant in St. Lucia. All sorts of promises. In my response, Madam Speaker, I expressed a lack of confidence in the ability of the government to deliver on the promises made. I made this observation then for two main reasons, Madam Speaker. One, because the promises made were unrealistic, the budget was filled with reckless desires, and I knew full well that the key actors in the drama of development in St. Lucia would find it difficult to participate in the ill-advised fantasies of the new government. And secondly, Madam Speaker, because this United Workers' Party administration has a poor history of implementing promises. Madam Speaker, not even among the few realistic promises were delivered. A key example was the implementation of St. Lucia's export strategy, which was mentioned in the first budget and again mentioned in this one. Madam Speaker, a growth stimulating policy which was pursued by the SLP government was industrial policy, an industrial policy whereby government took a direct, active role in shaping the structures of industry to promote growth. Our industrial policy, Madam Speaker, has 5 crucial elements. One, giving help and incentives to enterprise, especially in small firms. Special attention was given to the agro-processing, food and beverage, and arts and crafts sectors. Two, supporting innovation and exploitation of new technology, for example, ICT development. The Kenyan administration through telecom liberalization put the infrastructure in place to facilitate the growth of this new technology. Three, easing the burden of regulation and simplifying the planning system. Four, breaking up monopolies and fostering competition. As indicated earlier, because of the liberalization of telecommunications, we broke up the cable and wireless monopoly. Consequently, we now have communications companies providing internet, mobile, and cable TV services. And five, identifying areas that produce products that were ready for export and to take measures to make them export ready. By now, Madam Speaker, this government should have at least explored new areas of manufacturing, set in motion the export strategy, organize an agency that would assist local firms to market their goods overseas, following the example of Jampro in Jamaica and BIDC in Barbados, the Barbados Industrial Development Corporation, and TIDA, Trinidad Industrial Development Agency. They all provide export support to firms in their respective countries. And of course, Madam Speaker, by now, had we set in motion the export strategy, we at least could have linked up with the diaspora as well as the embassies overseas to assist our local firms. Madam Speaker, industrial policy has been known to assist tremendously in stimulating employment for young people and others in a country. Madam Speaker, notwithstanding external shocks, if this government had pursued growth stimulating policies, the social and economic situation in St. Lucia would have been better. But instead of pursuing growth stimulating policies, they are more interested in the politics of mendicancy, begging Taiwan for lollipop and tortilla chips. The Taiwanese experiment has been a palpable failure in this country, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, in the 2007-2008 budget address, mainland China was unceremoniously kicked out in favor of Taiwan. Taiwan promised COAP less. One of the big promises was the construction of an abattoir for St. Lucia. The Minister for Finance has at last provided an amount in the estimate for the meat processing facility at Beausejour, Vieux-Fort, an amount of $2.5 million out of a total project amount of $13.8 million. The interesting thing is, out of that $2.5 million, the Taiwanese will provide only $700,000, only 28%, and the other $1.8 million will come from a CDB loan. Several pronouncements before by the government of St. Lucia and Taiwan indicated that the meat processing plants will be financed 100% by the Taiwanese government. What has become of Taiwan's contribution to the construction of the meat processing facility, Mr. Prime Minister? According to the estimates, the total construction of the contribution of the Taiwanese is $10,965,000. Out of a total budget of $1.3 billion, a mere 0.8% of our total budget. Further, Madam Speaker, according to the estimates, the government of St. Lucia is due to receive a total amount of $112 million, and Taiwan's contribution is only $10.96 million. Again, a mere 9% of the total grant funds we are due to receive. Taiwan is supposed to be the trump card of the government of the day. However, its contribution to our budget is way incompatible with pronouncements of the government. Basically, the logical and perceptive mind must conclude that this is the sum total of our efforts in terms of foreign policy. Madam Speaker, since nothing happened, as predicted by me, that nothing would have happened in the 2007-2008 budget, in the second budget presented by this Prime Minister, they said they were going, the theme was from vision to implementation. I was again, Madam Speaker, in tune, quite conversant with the reality of things, and I did call it an espoir malpapaï budget. And needless to say, nothing happened. Nothing significant happened in terms of an effort to deliver on the promises made to the people of this country. The third and fourth budgets collided with the results of the failure to deliver on the promises made. Then we come to this year's budget, and we are greeted with the so-called UWP good news that there was 4.4% growth in the economy, a growth based on a mathematical calculation. If you go on the IMF website, you will see, consistent with what has been established, growth would have been at 0.8%. You can hide real GDP growth in a mathematical calculation, but growth cannot escape being exposed to the sunlight of pragmatism, because economic growth is the most important force for raising living standards and is a powerful weapon against poverty. Madam Speaker, let us take a look at the situation in this country. Derived from the 2010 population and housing census, from the preliminary report updated April 2011, the national unemployment rate as at 2010 stood at 21%. However, in the fourth quarter of 2006, prior to the Labour government leaving office, the unemployment rate was 13.6%. Under Labour, these unemployment rates were unprecedented, not even matched by what prevailed during the heyday of the banana industry. Under this UWP government, the current unemployment rate is most acute among young people. Unemployment among young people between the ages of 15 and 19 is 63%. While the unemployment rate among young people between the ages of 20 to 24 is 32%. Total youth unemployment within St. Lucia stands at 34%. The census defines youth unemployment as people between the ages of 15 to 29. The highest unemployment rate in the country is felt in Canaries at 33.7%. The constituency of Miku, which has been so loyal to the UWP government, possesses the second highest unemployment rate in the land at 27.2%. Madam Speaker, but the members opposite can find it fit to look at the members of UPOT South and look at the opposition and try to suggest that they fail the people of this country. But Madam Speaker, in the last year's budget, I discussed how the former Prime Minister and government used the budget as an instrument of development, which reflected a more strategic approach to change driven by objective and focus. In pursuing its goals of full employment, better housing, excellence in education, in rebuilding our towns and improving our rural areas, in protecting our environment, enhancing the quality of life of our youth, in all this and more, our people were given the opportunity to be participants in their development. Because the opposition in government knows that the creative capacity of human beings is at the heart of the development process. The society that is most successful at helping its entire people realize their creative potential is the society that will progress the fastest. And this is why the SLP government encouraged the expression of human creative capacity in seven ways, Madam Speaker. Through creation of an environment in which people expect and get fair treatment, through an effective and accessible education system, one that provides basic intellectual and vocational tools, nurtures inquisitiveness, critical faculties, dissent and creativity, and equips people to solve problems. Three, through a health system that protects people from diseases that debilitate and kill. Four, through creation of an environment that encourages experimentation and criticism. Five, through creation of an environment that helps people both discover the talents and interests and mesh them with the right jobs, through a system of incentives that rewards merit and achievement, and 7, through creation of the stability and continuity that make it possible to plan ahead with confidence. Taken together, Madam Speaker, these 7 conditions describe a modern approach to development in a democratic society. To drive this agenda, the SLP government returned the fundamental drivers of growth to center stage. It urgently improved macroeconomic stability, improved the investment climate for private sector-driven growth, and enhanced the quality and effectiveness of human resources and enabled knowledge-based growth. Key economic objectives were job creation, poverty alleviation, reduction of inequality, and the overall growth of the country. At the end of this period, Madam Speaker, we had economic growth when we left in 2006 of 5.6%, not using the rebase method, because the rebase method will put it above 10%. 5.6%. The highest growth rate in 15 years, Madam Speaker. But of course, we needed to assess the impact of that growth in the context of development. We have reduced unemployment, as I indicated earlier, from 22% to 13.6%. The level of indigence had been reduced significantly. Wealth was better distributed in this country, Madam Speaker. However, when the United Workers' Party assumed governance, when they tampered with the levers of power in this country, where they were supposed to have continued on the path of growth, they started to do their own thing. Ministries were disjointed, many bosses in the government, and there was no rational strategy, a well-coordinated and coherent strategy for development, Madam Speaker. And as I speak of extravagance in government, Madam Speaker, who comes to mind? The Minister for Tourism. Big airports. But before I enter upon this argument, Madam Speaker, I would like to ask the Prime Minister, as Minister for Finance, a few questions based on this year's budget. Why is the contribution for the Tourist Board not listed in pages 465 to 478 of the estimates, like that of other statutory corporations and other organizations? If there is a contribution among for the Tourist Board, are the overseas traveling expenses of the Minister for Tourism part of the contribution amount? There is evidence to confirm that overseas traveling expenses for the Minister for Tourism and Civil Aviation are not processed through the Treasury Department. At the Treasury, processing of overseas traveling expenses needs the approval of the Prime Minister or Cabinet Sec, and supporting hotel accommodation and incidental expenses, receipts, bills, there is no such requirement at the Tourist Board. Remember in one of the early budget presentations, the member for Choiseul, I think it was in 2008, 2009, he indicated that the Minister for Tourism can travel where and when he wants without the approval of the Prime Minister. Maybe he knew what he was talking about, Madam Speaker. This practice of the overseas traveling expenses of a minister being paid by a statutory body is most unusual. No other Minister for Tourism in our history have had the overseas traveling expenses shielded and hidden. Amongst contributions to the Tourist Board, it is highly improper for the Treasury Department and impossible for them to compile and report on the overseas traveling expenses of the Minister for Tourism and Civil Aviation if that becomes necessary. Madam Speaker, on page 4 of the External and Public Debt Sustainability Analysis 2010, the IMF reports, in recent years, St. Lucia has relied heavily on private financing sources, which has increased the cost of financing and roll over risk. Due to the small pool of creditors in the regional market, the risk of exhausting financial resources have increased. The IMF report further stated that if it becomes necessary to tap private international financial markets, St. Lucia will attain an unfavorable credit rating, which will result in the country facing higher interest rates on borrowing. Despite these warnings, the 2011 budget indicated that the government of St. Lucia would be borrowing a further 96,955,529 from new bond issues. This brings the total debt raised via private sources, bonds, over the last two financial years to 242,796,711, almost $250 million. When this is merged, Madam Speaker, with the financing arrangements under the Airport Redevelopment Project, it is clear that the government's current borrowing framework is reckless and jeopardizes our future ability to attain financing at reasonable rates. Also, the country will likely face significantly higher rates when attempting to roll over maturing debt obligations. But what is the obsession of the minister? What is the obsession of the minister with big airports, Madam Speaker? Madam Speaker, airports play a critical role in the economic development of communities, regions, and countries, especially in developing countries like St. Lucia. The ongoing globalization of aviation and the liberalization of the world economies have forced civil aviation administrators to focus more on the financial success of the airports and the industry in general. Given the increasing competitive nature of the civil aviation industry and the limited resources available to St. Lucia, it is imperative that St. Lucia develops long-term strategic plans which reflect cost-effective and comprehensive management thinking. Hence, I cannot follow the government's rationale for the demolition of the Hiwanora International Airport Terminal Building, since most of the carriers that operate into Hiwanora do so on the weekends, Madam Speaker. And for most of the week, the terminal is available. However, because of the congestion during the week, a major expansion of Hiwanora was undertaken in 1992, where we expanded the terminal from 38,000 square feet to 81,600 square feet. The major addition to Hiwanora's terminal building had to be lighted, cooled, and cleaned, and maintained, even with the same number of passengers on average. This has resulted in increased operating costs. Madam Speaker, it is well known in the industry where airports undertake expansions which are too large in relation to traffic needs, the consequences are short-term, mid-term, to long-term effects on unit costs. Madam Speaker, the current terminal building at Hiwanora can easily accommodate 2 million passengers per annum. And the government can take an expert from any part of the world. And if they say any differently, they need to go back to school. Hardly 500,000 people currently go through Hiwanora International Airport. And without the $45 in a lockbox mechanism, we need to subsidize carriers to come to St. Lucia. Without any redevelopment, we give airlines millions of dollars to come into St. Lucia because the people who come on vacation here are price-sensitive passengers. We do not have a big business class coming to St. Lucia. So when we undertake that type of development at Hiwanora, we are simply increasing a ticket price and making St. Lucia a more expensive tourist destination. It is reasonable to infer that if you are subsidizing carriers now, When you increase the $35, you will have to subsidize other governments more money. Madam Speaker, the seriousness of this matter can best be appreciated when I say to you that if our Almighty Father decided to drop a terminal building from heaven, to fall like manna from heaven, and give us that terminal that is being proposed by this government, I would suggest to my Heavenly Father that this will be to the detriment of Plasto. Because even if we do not pay for that new terminal building, it will increase operating costs significantly. And so far, the history has shown that the two airport operation in St. Lucia has never made any profit. So we are going to increase the financial drain on Plasto. We are going to make St. Lucia a more expensive destination. For what, Madam Speaker? For what? But Madam Speaker, the way forward should be for the country to undertake a comprehensive study. A comprehensive study, you have a master plan, you use historical data of airport traffic and passenger movement, and do a projection for the next 20 years. And based on that projection, it would inform the requirements of our country. It would inform the scale of development. An in-depth study of those air transport operations that are heavily dependent upon tourist demand will be seriously evaluated. A master plan shall be undertaken to ensure the proper planning, design, implementation, and management of St. Lucia's efforts, both as physical systems and in the context of the role and opportunities in the economic competition in air transport. A plan shall be developed for Huonora International Airport, which ensures that civil aviation policy is consistent with modern practice and is focused on strategic tourism and transportation goals, with the ultimate goal of making Huonora International Airport a more cost-effective gateway to St. Lucia and neighboring islands. And of course, Madam Speaker, whatever recommendations emerge from that master study, the recommendation shall ensure the application of sound economic principles to the airport operations in St. Lucia, as well as to bring the air transport industry into line with other economic sectors, with the view to produce substantial economic benefits for the industry and for the economy at large, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I have said before that I have no problems with the government doing some work at Huonora International Airport. There is need for a new technical block, Madam Speaker, at Huonora to at least make the working environment more conducive for the Met officers and the air traffic controllers. We can at least, in front of the terminal, increase the number of parking for airplanes. And there's a grass area with more than enough space to do that. If you have congestion problems in the terminal building downstairs, build on top of that existing terminal for arrivals and take the arrivals downstairs and extend it for departures. And the problem is resolved, Madam Speaker. The problem is resolved. That would stimulate employment for the locals in this country. Why does government come and talk about trying to involve locals? If we undertake that development, let me just give this Honorable House an idea as to how we are proceeding. The project has a high mechanical and electrical component involving air bridges, baggage, carousels, you have standby power, etc. The industry norm is to assume that this cost will be 50% of the total cost of the project. The profit margin used in this type of project is 20% as a minimum. The split of material and labor for building projects of this type is 60% material and 40% labor. Project cost would have a situation where the mechanical and electrical 50%, then the profit of the contractor and cost of work would be 105 million. Materials imported for building, 60%, 63 million. Local content, 40% of materials imported for building, which would be about $42 million. Where is the local component? And I'm sure, Madam Speaker, if we undertake suitable work at Iwanora, a lot of the monies that will be expatriated would be used locally. And at this point, we need a massive stimulus package in the economy of this country. Madam Speaker, I now want to move to the whole issue of infrastructure, Hurricane Thomas. We all witnessed with grief, Madam Speaker, how Thomas molested this country, Mother Helen, last year, October, and destroyed the capital base of this country. And Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister's 2011 budget address has a triple-headed theme which tries to say everything but delivers nothing. The theme is not reflected in the substance of the budget, and therefore bears no relation to the realities in the country. In other words, the Prime Minister's budget address is in conflict with his budget estimates. On page 11 of his budget address, the Prime Minister, after pointing out that Hurricane Thomas is estimated to have caused damage of EC $908 million, identifies the number two priority of this government as the reconstruction and reengineering of our country. His number one priority, he says, is to reduce crime, which has been steadily increasing in this country. And we all know that both the minister and the ministry seem to be languishing in lukewarm seas of comfortable mediocrity and virtually impotent in the resolution of this problem. But that's for another show, Madam Speaker. Let us now examine the priorities of the Prime Minister's budget estimates. His total projected capital expenditure on all sectors for 2011-2012 is $442.43 million. This is only 48.7% of the Hurricane Thomas damage. And so the actual allocation to the Hurricane Thomas recovery effort this year is much less. So already, for something which the Prime Minister says is a high priority for this government, there seems to be no urgency on his part to advance the reconstruction of the country. Here is what he allocates to Hurricane Thomas recovery to try to restore the $908 million in damage. Rehabilitation of major drains in Valley, $1.5 million. Major repairs to agricultural infrastructure, $135,712. Restoration of ecotourism facilities, $280,000. Forest restoration and rehabilitation, $486,797. Reconstruction and rehabilitation of roads, $10 million. Bridges and culverts, $1 million. Desilting of rivers and drains, $1.5 million. Community and agricultural feeder roads, $26,633,808. Secondary roads rehabilitation, $4,799,900. Slope stabilization, $1.2 million. Roads in city, town, and villages, $3 million. Disaster recovery program, $24,165,000. National Reconstruction and Development, $11,063,403. Hurricane Thomas Emergency Recovery, $9,963,410. This amounts to $95.73 million and could well be less, as some of the areas included may have expenditure on things other than Hurricane Thomas. It is paradoxical, however, that in the first year of the recovery, when we need to spend most, the Prime Minister is only covering 10.5% of the damage. At that rate, Madam Speaker, it is going to take at least 10 years to reconstruct the country. So clearly, the Prime Minister and this government cannot be serious about rebuilding this country quickly. It is business as usual for this government. What about the bad little Madam Speaker, where school children commute to and from the south, tourists, that's an unstable area. Another hurricane season is fast approaching, and we are just moving at snail's pace, while the Minister for Tourism is traveling all over the place and have all sorts of fancy ideas, airport, traveling without proper authority, without the proper authorization. All sorts of things are happening. Backseat drivers are in control. But we on this side, we would have brought immediate relief if we were in government to individuals and families hardest hit by Hurricane Thomas. Our priorities would have been to restore the major roadways, reduce the possibility of flooding, and assist affected persons to repair and replace their homes and other belongings. Madam Speaker, if we were here, we would have also put in place measures to help our country build resilience to better withstand storms in the future. As it is clear that one of the outcomes of climate change for the Caribbean will be more frequent and extreme weather events like hurricanes and droughts. Madam Speaker, if we were occupying the seat of government, we would have mobilized resources to undertake the reconstruction of our vital infrastructure. We will see to it that our primary roads and bridges are reconstructed, our damaged and silted agricultural lands restored, and our national water distribution system repaired. We would have mobilized significant financial support for our national reconstruction program from our traditional development partners, and we would use these funds properly to put large numbers of our people to work, making our country even better than it was before Thomas. Not on the basis of boss man, I want a contract. It would be stimulating work for the people of this country. There would be no boss man involved. Building resilience, Madam Speaker. We would have begun preparing our country to deal with further natural disasters, which are a natural consequence of our geography. As the member for Labri, Madam Speaker, I recommend that we initiate a review and update of our hazard maps, making use of a combination of new technology, empirical data, and local knowledge. We must develop a national geographic information system which will allow us to use information for better land use planning and risk assessments. We have public officers who are trained in the use of GIS, and we would have used their skills and their training to assist in this important exercise. In government, Madam Speaker, we would have immediately embarked upon a comprehensive community disaster risk reduction program that, among other things, would seek to control and manage runoff from roofs and road surfaces and address critical issues related to drainage. It is clear that this UWP government has marginalized the National Emergency Management Organization, NEMO. This is very important, Madam Speaker, because NEMO has a critical role to play before, during, and after a national disaster. Madam Speaker, it was rather unfortunate that we were supposed to have had Julekwe all that same weekend, and the government had such a laissez-faire attitude that, with all the reports from the Met Office, the government never told the people of this country that Julekwe all would have been postponed. So people thought, they heard hurricane, they thought it was a joke. But if we were in office, and this leader of the opposition as Prime Minister always took NEMO seriously, we always advised the people of this country, it had to take the member for Viewport South and leader of the opposition to call from overseas to warn the people of this country regarding what was approaching St. Lucia. So we must, Madam Speaker, with urgency, reestablish NEMO's importance in preparing our country to mitigate the impact of natural disasters and in coordinating the response to a national emergency. Not like what we are seeing now. We had a St. Jude fire. Instead of NEMO coordinating, it was the Ministry of Health. We had a problem in Denry, the flooding in Denry. It was the Denry Village Council. What is going on in this country? Bagayan Pagal. Madam Speaker, the next frontier that has to be explored is the Northeast Corridor. This area is vitally important for a range of economic activity, particularly agriculture and tourism. It is the most important link, Madam Speaker, between Castries and Viewport. Attention to the badly is necessary. We cannot continue to hold our breaths, Madam Speaker, and worry every rainy season that landslides will block the Badlil and cut off access to the East Coast and to Iwanora International Airport. It is necessary that we develop the corridor from Kasaba to Lovet. We must commission a feasibility study of this road in our first year of office, Madam Speaker, with detailed designs being done in three phases. The first phase must be to establish the link from Kasaba to Boseju to Bugis. When completed, Madam Speaker, this road will open new areas of expansion for touristic development along the Northeast coastline, and most importantly, will address the monumental challenge that we face every rainy season with the vulnerability of the Badlil. As part of our redevelopment of the Northern Road Network, we must seek to improve the existing junctions of the Castries-Grosile Highway. Madam Speaker, if we were occupying the seat of government during the passage of Thomas, a critical component of our road program, which must be our national drainage problem, the intention must be to lay the platform for the creation of a well-constructed, robust national road network. Madam Speaker, Hurricane Thomas exposed the vulnerability of our bridges and culverts. Many of the major culverts crossing our main primary roads are at the end of their service life. These culverts were constructed using steel pipes, which are now rusted and beginning to fail. The increase in rainfall we have experienced over the last 10 years, which is expected to increase in coming years, has also created the need to replace some culverts with larger openings to cater for the increases in runoffs. We must implement a program to address these failing culverts, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, if we were there, we would have given priority to the issue of parking and bus terminals in the Castries, in the city of Castries. A Grand Castries Transportation Study was done in 1993-1994, and we believe that there is need to revisit the proposals developed in that study. Madam Speaker, we must commission a new transportation study to look at the greater Castries area with the aim to implement the proposals coming out of that study relating to parking and public transport facilities. The intention must be, Madam Speaker, to establish one major bus terminal in Castries and one in Viewport. And what are taxis, Madam Speaker? We all saw during Thomas how public servants and others in the southern part of the island could not gravitate naturally and normally to work in Castries. And all of our villages along the coast have underutilized docking facilities. Therefore, Madam Speaker, we would have moved immediately to look at the possibilities of introducing water taxis as another avenue for travel around our island. This will require some research and evaluation, but we see this as a natural progression in the development of the transportation sector. Madam Speaker, speaking of the transportation sector, the leader of the opposition and member for Viewport South had a few questions for the Minister for Communications and Works. And whilst I do not
And remember, you have 10 more minutes for your presentation.
Madam Speaker, I'd like to move to invoke Section 7-10 to allow the member for library another 60 more minutes.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 7-10 be invoked in order to allow Honourable Member for Labrie an additional 60 minutes to complete his presentation. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Member, you may continue.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker, and my parliamentary colleagues. But, Madam Speaker, I just have a few questions for my good friend from Castries Southeast. Not hard questions. I scrutinized the estimates, and out of that particular exercise, I felt it necessary, prudent on this occasion, to ask a few questions. How many of these projects are new, and how many are ongoing? I would like just to assist my understanding. How much of the budgeted amount has been committed? A number of departmental advances have been given by the Minister of Finance against the budget. How many advances have been issued, and what is the value of these advances? Every river and waterway needs desilting and cleaning. Why is it only $1.5 million that has been provided for desilting rivers and drains in capital expenditure estimates of this year? There is an amount of $2.97 million under the road infrastructure program in the recurrent expenditure estimates regarding operating and maintenance service. How much of that $2.97 million will be used for desilting of our rivers and drains? Even if all was used for desilting of rivers, the total that would be available is $4.47 million, an amount totally insufficient. Why there is a need to have a phase two project under the Allan Buske Highway? Is it work that was not properly executed by the contractor under phase one of the project? If this is the case, this is wrongly classified. In fact, the contractor should foot the cost as per his responsibilities under the contract. Payment requests for goods and services paid on the project regarding the now widespread lease financing agreement mechanism are not supported by proper documentation. There is no separation of clear distinction made between the amount being paid for goods and services and the amount being paid as finance charge interest expense, as required by the Financial Procurement and Stores Regulation. So, Madam Speaker, if I may continue in the Department of Communications and Works, I would suggest at this sitting of the House, Madam Speaker, that based on the complex and fluid world situation, we need to be more prudent with our spending. As a member for Labrie, based on my observation, I would like to recommend that we consolidate in one ministry all the government departments responsible for physical infrastructure planning and development. This new Ministry of Infrastructure and Transport would have been fully organized to manage the entire public infrastructure portfolio, with responsibilities for managing infrastructure planning and priority setting, and would supervise all national public infrastructure works, including those currently supervised by the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Education. Among its responsibilities, I propose, Madam Speaker, identify the infrastructure developments that will benefit key public sectors and improve the overall standard and quality of living, review and evaluate infrastructure plans submitted by partner ministries, and make recommendations to Cabinet for the government's public sector investment program, oversee the implementation of the public sector investment program, including the management of any attendant risk, coordinate the delivery of infrastructure programs, Madam Speaker, determine the most effective financing and procurement strategies for public infrastructure projects and ensure that the stock of public infrastructure assets of the country is maintained in a state of good repair. Elimination of waste. The ministry would be charged with the responsibility to ensure that the right infrastructure is built in the right place, in a manner which is transparent, open and fair, and makes the most efficient use of public funds. By eliminating the existence of several project implementation units, Madam Speaker, in various ministries, with the resulting duplication and wastage of resources, this new ministry would create the synergies that are required to ensure maximum efficiencies and impact. Madam Speaker, in addition, I am recommending that the housing department become a critical component in the Ministry of Social Transformation, and a major goal always been to increase the supply of affordable land and housing in a manner that poses minimum negative structural consequences for community development. So this is the natural kind of nexus, Madam Speaker. I recommend that we put measures in place to ensure that the poor can get access and title to land, as promised in our manifesto, Madam Speaker. We make housing lots available to people who are occupying government land in Auger, Angers, and Myers-Bridge. And as I speak about occupying government lands in Auger, Madam Speaker, I wish to spend a few moments to speak on an issue which is important. Madam Speaker, I live in the community of Auger, and on a daily basis, people visit me for different reasons. My home is like an office, and I welcome everybody. And there is a lady, in fact, before I say so, I must say to you that Auger people develop that community, whether it's on government lands or the private lands. They work hard, Madam Speaker. Work hard, collect some resources, build a foundation, work hard again and put up the structure. And they don't build any shanty towns. You know. They build proper structures in the areas. Some of them have resources available to purchase lands on NDC lands. From 1958, there's a lady who have been renting from NDC. 1958, before I was born, paying every year. In fact, in February 2006, she made a deposit of $2,500 to purchase the land, begging NDC to sell the land to her. She's prepared to pay. She's not asking them for any favors. The lady built her foundation. And they're harassing the lady. The lady is a senior citizen trying to build a proper dwelling home. Her children are assisting her in this regard. And NDC and DCA wants to come to bulldoze the lady's house, the lady's foundation. Now, Madam Speaker, this is not justice. From 1958, you have been renting that land, made a deposit on that same land in February of 2006. And the way to resolve it, because you have power, you are drunk with power, is to go and bulldoze a foundation. They sent her a long list to go to court. These are the things that cannot happen under the Labour Party, you know, Madam Speaker. Every time the United Workers Party is in office, they bulldoze homes. They bulldoze homes. And then, they will tell NDC, Lucilec, Wasco, do not connect the people. The people at Green Mountain, Rocky Lane would know about that very well. Because after hurricane, they were sent there by the then representative, the late Remy Lesmer. And during the time of the United Workers Party, they refused to allow the people access to proper facilities. It had to take the Labour government between 1997 and 2006 to ensure that they got water, electricity, etc., Madam Speaker. This this government come and talk about the members of UFOP South and the leader of the opposition? That is so bad. But I'm coming to that. We will also target, Madam Speaker, specific communities such as Ancillary, Canaries, and Sufre to acquire lands for low and middle income housing. The program for the rationalization of unplanned development, PROUD, which was created in 2000, should be reinstated, Madam Speaker. PROUD allow poor people who had been squatting on land for decades to gain title to these lots. But it also provided proper drains, footpaths, and roads in these developments where none had existed before. Unfortunately, this program, which benefited St. Lucians in communities like La Richousse, Demon, Debara, Wavin Poisson, La Dehi, and Sarot, was terminated by the United Workers' Party government. As the member for Labri, Madam Speaker, as a man with a social conscience, I advocate that with immediate effect, we reinstate PROUD so that illegal and unplanned settlements around the island can be transformed into well-structured communities with proper facilities for education, recreation, and waste disposal. I recommend, Madam Speaker, a public sector housing program designed to jumpstart the construction industry. There is a huge inventory of construction equipment that is lying idle within the industry. We must begin several housing developments throughout the island. The following areas must be given priority consideration: Denry Valley, Miku, Babuno, Ancillary, Viewfort, Choiseul, and of course, Labri. The concept, Madam Speaker, would be based on a 4-year housing program with the development of service lots only in the first 2 years. To encourage in the first 2 years the lot, and the intention is to create as many service lots as possible in the first 2 years and then proceed with housing construction in the following 2 years. I believe that the housing sector will be used to create the much needed surge in construction activity by mobilizing the idle equipment and the several tradesmen, masons, carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, while simultaneously addressing the social issues relating to the informal settlements that are spreading within our urban center. Madam Speaker, with all what the government have been saying there over the last few days, how they give this contract and boss man, when you're going to get a contract, and then they're boasting about that. When the Labour Party was in government, Madam Speaker, we built roads and drains along with the roads. You needed no boss man to get work. There was work in the country for St. Lucians, Madam Speaker. But, you know, they starve the people of this country. And when they come with a little lollipop, as if it's God, they see, so that they're going to appreciate them. That strategy will not work anymore. We need to be serious as leaders. We need to provide proper and vigorous leadership to the people that we represent. Madam Speaker, as I prepare to conclude my presentation, I will return to the question that I asked in my introduction. Has the government delivered on the promises made to the people of this country? And the answer, Madam Speaker, is a categorical no. Did we expect them to deliver on every issue, every promise? No, Madam Speaker. We understand. We understand that the vocation of politicians ought to be to represent, to channel, to lead the aspirations of the electorate. Not on every issue, but in essential direction, Madam Speaker. And today, standing here in the fifth budget of this government, one must come to the ineluctable conclusion that this government has squandered the mandate given them by the people of this country. But they are busy attacking the member for Beaufort South and leader of the opposition about management of economy, about this and about that. Madam Speaker, the leader of the opposition and member for FIFO staff has a very impressive record. In 1997, Madam Speaker, through the contract of faith, he entered into a new covenant with the people of this country. Entered into a new covenant with the people of this country. And 5 years later, Madam Speaker, he came to the people again with another manifesto. And at the back of the manifesto, of that 2001 manifesto, he actually articulated the achievements of the government. And whilst I will not read all, Madam Speaker, and I'm going to make the 2001 Labour Party manifesto a document of the House, but this is what was the record. 4 new secondary schools constructed. New school places for over 2,000 secondary students. Modern Education Act instituted. National Enrichment and Learning Program initiated. Textbook and bursary system expanded to provide assistance to more families. 19 greenhouses established in schools island-wide. 4 human resource development centers constructed. 3 new daycare centers constructed. New accident and emergency departments established. New shelter for abused persons constructed. Health sector reform consultation completed. National Skills Development Center opened. Social welfare payments increased by 100%. Maternity benefits increased. Major social recovery program for banana farmers initiated. New national stadium nearing completion. National cricket ground nearing completion. 228 new police officers recruited. New police station constructed in Masha. Reconstruction of 6 police stations. Refurbishment of 4 police stations. Police provided with 27 new vehicles and 20 new motorcycles. Construction of new correctional facility advanced. Draft labor code developed. National television network established. Property taxes reduced. Pensioners exempted from payment of property taxes. First-time homeowners exempted from property taxes for 3 years. New commercial buildings exempted from property taxes for 3 years. 3,264 exempted from payment of income taxes to give them greater disposable income. Cable and wireless government tax removed. National youth policy developed. National sports policy developed. Multipurpose courts and playing fields established. National industrial policy developed. Independence Day celebrations given greater significance. Duty-free exemptions for returning nationals on household effects and equipment. And Madam Speaker, a whole list of significant achievements to the people of this country. But you on this side of the House have come on the eve of an election with nothing to show. Tikanal. That's gutter politics. Gutter politics. To try to tell people that sea canal is better than roads with proper drains. So you all have nothing to show. The leader of the opposition can show in his first 5 years. You're going to show me? You should keep quiet. You're the member for Choiseul. Because you can't show me anything. And through you, I don't need the protection of the chair, but through you, Madam Speaker, the member for Choiseul is in no position to debate anything with me. He does not even know his name, Madam Speaker.
Honourable member, please.
Madam Speaker, a governing party must have the self-confidence to want power and to believe that its exercise of it can tilt the country in the right direction. But it should also have the humility to recognize on any likely projection of the past, its power will come to an end. The test of its statesmanship in the context of history will be how well it fits into a continuous process of adaptation in which leadership is combined with sensitivity to national mood. And if I'm reading the mood of the people correctly, they are not jealous of people like you, the member for Choiseul, to say that they are going to re-elect you above the interest, like universal health care. Because they know when all the shouting has died, when all the bans are gone, in the aftermath of this election, that there is a stark responsibility in that hour of history, that they will not see a number of things that they see ahead of an election, after. And for 4.5 years, they'll suffer. And then you come with lollipops and bonbon and sweetie on the eve of elections. Yes. So do not attempt to ridicule the people of this country or to believe that they are stupid to just come and re-elect a government that has not delivered on the fundamental promises that were made. That's how it is. This is not a personal matter between me and members opposite. I've never taken my politics to any kind of personal level. All I'm saying to them, Madam Speaker, is accounting time for this government, and they're not accounting for anything. So today, in this final budget, fortunately the grand lies of UWP are all in ashes, destroyed by self-combustion. And there is little left in grand terms to lie about. And this removes the last major obstacle to a fresh start in rethinking politics in favor of the people of this country. So, Madam Speaker, despite what we say in this Honorable House, I am not one of those who boast about. I know that my Master, my God, who entrusted me with certain talents, to utilize those talents to take my people to the promised land, shall intervene in every election, like he did in 2006. In 2006, Madam Speaker, I acknowledge that it was divine intervention. The people of this country had an opportunity to compare two solid terms of achievement of the Labour government with the party show that is passing for government today. So, Madam Speaker, I'm not going to pass judgment. I am not going to pass judgment. I will simply say that everything in my life is subordinated to the supreme interest of taking my people to the promised land. And in the final analysis, Madam Speaker, the Lord's will shall be done. But for me, today, Madam Speaker, I can only re-echo the words of a great man. Man's dearest possession is life. And since it is given him but once, he must so live as not to be dismayed with the shame of a cowardly existence and trivial past. So live that dying he might say, all my life and all my strength were given to the finest cause in the world, the liberation of his people. And I, Alvar Romanus Baptist, will stand in this Honorable House, Madam Speaker, and always fight on behalf of the people that I represent and the people of St. Lucia as a whole. Madam Speaker, the Lord's will shall be done. We are in a very important season on the eve of an election. Let the people decide. I await the results from the court of public opinion. I thank you, Madam Speaker.
Honourable member for Labrie, Honourable Baptiste, in